Okay, let me remember to push that record button. Well, welcome. There's a lot of people on the call, a few more than I expected to be on. That's great. Happy New Year to everybody as we head into a very interesting year, 2018. It's going to be one from a market perspective. Excuse me. I think it's going to be one of the more interesting years than we've had since probably 2009 or 10. They were more interesting years, more on a negative side. But actually, the last 8 years have been very negative from an outlook standpoint. So we've got a much more positive year and some exciting things that potentially could happen. And as I talk about the economy and as I talk about the markets and what could happen, keep in mind there are a number of things that could derail anything that I say. One would be war or some other geopolitical event that created, for instance, a interruption, a large interruption in the flow of oil that created a trade kind of embargo or war, so to speak, anything that created some sort of currency crisis that would primarily be out of Asia between China and Japan, maybe something temporarily delayed like a Brexit unraveling or Spain, Portugal, or Italy. Going into financial, major financial issues, which is very possible. None of those three are anywhere near to being out of the woods from a banking system standpoint. So anything there could happen that could create a major interruption in our markets and some of those things in our economy. Obviously, more rhetoric from North Korea and Iran. We don't know what is going to happen there with a uprising there of the people in Iran. We haven't been hearing it in the news much, which is somewhat disappointing because I'd rather hear about that than all the other garbage that's going on. Anyway, so there are some of the things that could really unravel. I guess the other thing would be, because I guess this would include this year, would be an election in November that looked like the power was turning from the Republicans to the Democrats. And that certainly is possible. If Republicans were to lose control in the House, very unlikely, they have so many seats, but they could. If Republicans lose control of the Senate, where it looks like, that could change things dramatically and, by the way, will impact the economy and the markets. So that is something that we don't want to discount. The reason why is because we would turn back into very much a do-nothing Congress. We would be in a position where we would be dependent upon now the President of the United States doing executive orders that are benefiting the economy, that similar to what President Obama did, that hurt the economy. So we'd be seeing that in reverse, and it's a little bit harder to do some of those things by executive order that are going to have a real impact on the market, because with any executive order comes a certain level of uncertainty because they could be unraveled by the next president. So it would cause turmoil in this market if that were to happen, and it would start in about November 10th, a couple of days after the election. It wouldn't be well into next year. It would happen immediately. And certainly what we will do to protect against that in a sense is that we will try to get a vision of that, a picture of that. It's going to be a little bit harder because we know how undependable polls are. And that's not likely to change much. Those polls are going to continue to be very undependable. So we'll have to watch that and see what comes of of that by August. Certainly, if it looked like there was going to be a change, a major sea change in control, then we would probably be in a selling type mode. So something that we need to be concerned about, because that could turn everything over. I talked this week on the air that, or last week, that I was probably going to have something in the conference call that was going to change, that I was going to be changing some of my strategy in the short term. That is true. I'm going to do that. But let me just be clear about this. It is not a permanent strategy, and it's not necessarily an underlying or overriding philosophy that I'm going to change about investing. This is something that I've done 4, 5, 6 other times in the last 30 years. I don't know how many times off the top of my head, but I've done this several times. I don't say this from a good perspective. I hope that if I do this, that I am doing it based on an assumption that I will be wrong on. But all the other times that I've done it, it has paid off. In other words, I've been right about a certain direction of things, and that would be disappointing right now if that were the case. So I hope that doesn't happen, but I hope I'm not right in changing the strategy. But nonetheless, there's going to be a bit of a strategy that I am going to change. And it looks now like I'm going to have a special conference call. This is a fairly significant change, not for you guys, not that you're going to have to make dramatic changes in anything that you're doing. But it is in some ways pretty significant, and I want to be very cautious and make sure that I've dotted every I and crossed every T. I am depending on something this time and changing that strategy that I never did before, and that's going to be dependent upon some information that I am trying to glean from some people in a very specific area that can help me with this. I've said this before, I've said it for a long, long time, and I've been faithful to this for the last 35 years. I don't like to talk, and I don't ever talk about my contacts and who I talk to on the inside of any situation. There's a part of me that says, well, I should, because I could parlay that into a lot of credibility and maybe raise money off it and do a lot of things. So I could parlay that into feeding my ego or my pride for everybody and flexing some muscles that I don't have. But nonetheless, from a prideful standpoint, I could reveal those things. But neither one of those scenarios are very appealing to me. So I place far more emphasis and credibility in my credibility and in the fact that when I talk to people, they and call upon sources, they have a great deal of respect for my confidentiality and would tell me anything. I've had situations where I've said too much information, don't need to know all that. That's how confident they have been, and I take good pride in being able to keep my word under all conditions in that regard. So it has been a wonderful testimony to my Savior that I would say the majority of those sources that I use are not believers. They certainly know I am, and if I were to violate that confidence, it would hurt my testimony to them, and my testimony to them has been, I hope, of great value to them as they gives me a little more freedom to talk to them about spiritual things as well. So it has been interesting, and you know, people criticized me over the video. I told you I saw I saw some an article today that kind of confirmed everything I said. Somebody even said that I was basing them on assumptions. I did email that person and say, you have no clue what I based it on. And trust me, it wasn't based on assumptions. I don't do assumptions. And I don't do anything that serious based on a bunch of assumptions. I've never done it. I'm not going to start now. So everybody else does things not on assumption, but on for monetary reason or other reasons that have little to do with the facts of what they're reporting or talking about. I don't do that, don't care to do it, don't need to do it, don't desire to ever do that. So anyway, I am checking some things just to kind of get some confirmation. I am 90% sure about some reasoning for wanting to change the strategy, and I want to be 100% certain. It doesn't mean it's going to go the way I think it is, but nonetheless, I want to enter into it with a strong certainty. That's the way things are. So I'll be talking about that on a conference call. I'm not gonna put it in writing. I'm not gonna put it in alert. I'm gonna need to talk to you one on one. If you miss that conference call, do what I always do, and I put it on the website on the partner side of the page, and you'll have 24 hours to listen to it before we take it down. So everybody should get a shot at listening to that. So hopefully that's how it's going to work, and it should be within in the next couple of weeks. So be looking forward to that. It's going to be important. None of it is going to be a mandate. Obviously, you can do what you want with the information. So I'm not saying that you must follow this. It's not going to be that kind of thing. I've had situations where I've said, please do this at all costs. Don't think too much about it. Just do it. I've had situations like that. This is not going to be one of those. This is going to be a change in strategy. You can elect whether you want to take me up on that strategy or not. I'll get that out to everybody as soon as I possibly can. This is being recorded, so it will be excuse me, on the website for the next 24 hours. One of the things that I do want to talk a little bit about, and that's my 8 for 18. So my 8 for 18 came out, and as God would have it, it's done. They've all done well. They've been in a positive territory, and things seem to be moving in the right direction. Look, it's 1 week. So we won't get too excited because these are things that we were going to keep in our portfolio for an indefinite period of time, a very long period of time. So with that in mind, don't worry about what's happened. I was looking at one before the conference call. It was up 5.5% since I put it on the list, but that's okay. I didn't put it on the list for any kind of short-term thing. It was long-term. And as long as it stays on my, as long as they stay on my buy list, and you feel like you want to use some of those, do it. Don't worry about where they are. We're just looking at the stability of them in the very long term, and that's what's important. So don't hesitate to, don't say, oh, it's too late, I've missed it. Somebody said that to me yesterday on the phone. You haven't missed anything. You missed that initial little run-up. But you know what? It could go down 10%, all eight of them next week. So you didn't miss anything. Don't worry about it. So if it goes down 10% next week, everybody will say, oh, I should have waited. So I always want, my ideal situation is when I put something on the buy list, people jump on it, but I know that doesn't happen. And so I'm not too concerned about it. Number of things that I want to update you on, and one is the asset allocation model has changed, obviously. There are three other things that are changing that I want to give you a heads up on just so you see it. I know there's a lot of people that are still going to ask me about it, but I'm adding three categories on the broad list. You know how I have financials and I have preferreds. Well, financials are preferreds, so prefers our financials, but I broke it down because it makes it a lot easier to do that and develop an asset allocation model. Same thing with IT and technology. They're broken down on my asset allocation model as to same thing. They fall under the technology category. So if you're buying technology, you can buy some technology in the information technology area, or you can buy things in cyberspace kind of technology. It doesn't matter. It's technology. And when I put an asset allocation for technology, I'm talking about either or, both of those, or whatever. I don't believe having some information technology and having some technology is a diversification in that sector. So it's not like refining and oil exploration having two different things. Not like that. I don't believe it is. Some might argue that it is. I won't. It's not. Same thing. but I'm breaking it down by the way it is broken down in reference to generally accepted sectors through all brokers. The other thing I'm doing is I'm adding a financial. So I have financials and preferreds, both financials technically. Then I am adding financials, REITs, real estate investment trust. So I'm adding another category of financials. So you're going to have financial REITs. Then I am adding another category called ETFs. If you have an ETF that is a, I don't have too many ETFs, gold in it, it would be, in a commodity. But I am also having another category called commodities, which is going to be very limited. But that commodity could be an ETF. So, but it is going to break down in a different sector. The reason I'm doing that is because it's going to help you when you are working, if you choose to do so, when you are working in the asset, in the portfolio tracker system that is going to help you track all of your assets in the portfolio. Because there's going to be a drop-down arrow that you will select. So you will put in, you have a 100 shares of Caterpillar and what you paid for it, that stuff that you're going to have to put in, the symbol, how much you paid for it, and how many shares you have. Then on the drop-down arrow, you will put what category Caterpillar is in, and you would click industrials. So that's all. Everything else is calculated out for you, and it's going to tell you if you're over and under in industrials or where you are. When I change the asset allocation model, it's going to change all of your portfolios automatically. But we're also going to have all the Timothy funds will be listed separately, but then there's going to be a mutual fund other. The reason why we're going to have mutual fund other is because, I don't know, most mutual funds I don't classify into sectors because it's too hard to do that unless they're sector funds, and I don't have any sector funds on my list, so and likely never will. So the mutual funds, there's going to be a mutual fund other. So if you put in your 401k mutual funds into the tracker so that you could have all your money in one place and you can see what it looks like and how much it is or how much it's going up, down, or whatever, you'll be able to see it, you would choose mutual fund other in that area. You don't have to. You can assign it any category you want, but that's how that's going to be broken out. And I wanted to have a commodities and a real estate investment trust because I think it's important that you break down, that you know in the financial sector how much you have in preferreds, how much you have in real estate investment trust, and how much you have in other financials like banks and insurance companies. So that's why that's going to be broken down, because it's going to help you from a management perspective to see that. You could say, oh, I met my allocation in financials, but wait, it's all in one place. That is a diversification like we would have in energy, because preferreds are going to do something different than banks are going to do, and banks are going to be a little different than REITs. So that is diversification in that sector. So those three categories, ETFs, financial REITs, and commodities, there's going to be three added categories in that. So when you look at my broad list here in the next couple weeks, maybe even the end of this week, you'll see those added categories. There may not be many things in there, may not be any things in there, but give me a chance to put some things over there. But you'll see that in the category. So that's how it's going to show up. So I want to bring that to your attention. I'm still very excited about this portfolio tracker. It's probably going to go to test on Monday. People have asked me if they can participate. We've got probably about 10 more people participating in that than I'd like. So I would have to say we're closed on that. But we want to get through this in 3 days. Our goal is to get it tested in 3 days. My prayer is that there's going to be very few changes that we have to make after testing, that everything works according to the way it's supposed to work. We might not have to make any changes, but we're going to see after testing. Testing is not developing. It's testing what's already there. There are a lot of people testing, or there are many people that might be testing, say, I think you should do this and think you can do that. You can think all you want, I'm not changing it. It is going to be what it is. I have very, very specific reasons as to why it is like that. So it's probably not going to change. We just want to make sure everything is working properly. There may be some tweaks down the road, but we just want to get it all working. So I'm very excited about that coming out. The other thing I want to remind you about, because you might have young people, you may be young yourself, you may be just getting started, you might be a new partner, and we are doing a series called Investing 101. And they're 20-minute videos that we are producing and putting together. So it is going to be, we're not sure how we're releasing that, whether it's going to be to the general public, whether we're going to sell it on Amazon or what we're going to do. We're not going to do that, but I'm putting these videos together. They're going to be 20 to 25 minute modules. They're going to be released once a week. That's very intentional. I would like you to get involved from the very beginning, because I want you to watch the first module, and I want you to have a week to digest it and to watch it again and watch it again and watch it again if you have to. So that by the time you get to the second module, you've got that first one. You've got the first one down. And by the time you get to the third, you got the first and second down. So we're going to, and that's why I'm only doing it in 20 minutes. I don't want you to have to spend an hour watching something, because you'll, you know, zone out halfway through and miss it. And, you know, if you're like me, you're zoned out at the same spot all the time. You'll never get it. I want you to really be able to stay focused. The human mind can only stay focused for 12 minutes. Attention span is 7 minutes. So I doubt even 20 minutes is probably too long in all likelihood. But hopefully you'll be able to get through 20 minutes and then go back and look at that. So I'm very excited about that, because really from a selfish perspective, it's going to eliminate a lot of questions. I think that everybody that is just getting started in this, whether you're 21 or 91, if you're just getting started in this, it's going to eliminate and answer a lot of your questions and give you something to some foundational things that you can fall back on. So I'm excited about doing that. And so, and once we do it and get them all done, we'll make them continue to make those available. So anyway, that's another thing that we're doing that that I'm real excited about. And I just want to share with you, because this is a question that I get asked so much, and I may sound very vague when I answer. So people say, what's going to happen when you're dead and gone? They don't say it like that. They always say, what's your succession plan? So I have a succession plan. I have been mentoring two people for a long, long time. You will begin seeing this year some people coming alongside me every once in a while as a co-host. I'm not going anywhere. Unless the Lord takes me. So I'm still going to be active in the ministry until I drop. But I don't believe I'm going to be on the air until I drop. But very much active in the ministry. So just so you know, it is something that we are working on a regular basis, and I'm very aware of. And you'll be starting to see some evidence, a little bit more evidence of that this year, sometime towards the last quarter of the year, maybe sooner. But so I'm happy about that. But as you can imagine, it's a very difficult process. And a lot of my investment strategies and what I do, I still haven't even come close to fully mentoring. I am holding on tighter than I should to all of that, I must admit. But nonetheless, that's a different, we're getting to all of that as well. So just pray that God would continue to raise those people up here in the ministry, and that would be great. We're looking for a new building, and I'll talk about that at another time, but we're looking for a new building. My goal is to buy something, and I'm hoping that we can do that. We've got so many other things that we are doing that you can't even imagine of what God is doing with the ministry. So we are growing out of necessity into a bigger space. So that's good, and that's going to help us a great deal, because it's going to make life selfishly, again, a lot easier for me. So there's some of the things that we're working on. I feel very good about what is happening in the economy. There's very little aspect of it that I am pessimistic about it. I am concerned about our own U.S. Political event that could happen. I wish we could put sour grapes and bitterness aside long enough to watch America turn around. I wish we had more patriots in Washington than we do. I think Donald Trump has created some patriots that I never believed were patriots, and I'm starting to think that maybe they've turned around. And I think that has been the help of some great people that have helped them, guys like Orrin Hatch and a couple others that have made a great headway for this president with some of the folks in Senate and the House. So I feel really good about that. I am concerned, though, about some major geopolitical event in November happening. I hope that the do-nothing Republicans get out of there. I do hope that there are more candidates in the primaries. There are some good ones. There's a great young lady in Ohio that is running for the House of Representatives. She has stood up hard for her Christian faith. She has been questioned. She has been hammered, and she has been unwavering. She's a very smart young lady. She loves the country. She's a patriot. So I'm excited about that. And hopefully she'll make some headway. There's a young man, former Marine, from served in Afghanistan, out in Wisconsin, another great guy that I'm going to do everything I can for in Wisconsin. So there's some good people out there, and there's some good primaries coming about. And I hope that some of the primaries I hope happen do happen, and we can maintain control with even better people. So we'll see, but I am concerned about it. That is for sure. I'm not, just so you know, there is a lot of speculation about the U.S. dollar right now. I'm not going to talk much about that because it's a distraction more than it is anything. But it's something that I am keeping a very close watch on. I am worried about not our currency. I'm worried about other currencies, particularly currencies of China and Japan, and what might happen there. Anything that happens there will probably be a positive for us. But nonetheless, it is concerning because I am probably more concerned about the global economy than I've ever been. And I can't ever remember a time when I was as concerned about trade as I am. I really mean that. I mean, I remember other periods of time where trade was an issue, but I never ever remember being as concerned about trade and how it's going to impact the American economy and the American markets like I am today. I haven't been talking about it a whole lot, but I'm very, very concerned about that and where that's going. I think that is another black swan thing that could happen to impact our economy and markets. And I am concerned. I have made 3 calls to somebody I know at the Department of Commerce laying out some information that, you know, I would like to have and like to have a conversation. I've offered to go down there and sit and speak. So I'm hoping I get that opportunity because it'll be good for me more than anything. If it's good for me, I hope it'll ultimately be good for you, and that you will have the opportunity to glean some good information from that as well. So I am concerned. That's probably my biggest concern on anything right now in front of us here in the U.S. Would be the trade issue. So we'll watch that, but I am concerned. There's a lot of things going on from a that could turn things sour very quickly. I am concerned about the enthusiasm in the financial sector. I know all these banks are giving $1,000 bonuses. It is amazing. Giving $1,000, another bank just announced that they're doing $1,000 in their 401k and raising minimum wage in their company to $15. An unbelievable amount of enthusiasm in the financial sector. I'm a little concerned about that because I'm afraid it's masking their problems, and they've got a lot of problems. I don't like the financial sector. I do very little banking. Most of my banking is with credit unions, Christian Community Credit Union, and another credit union that I use. But most of my banking is with credit unions. I feel a little bit better about that. But I'm concerned about the financial sector, and I'm concerned about all the enthusiasm, because all the problems that these guys have not gone away because of the tax bill. Their problems are very deep-rooted in derivatives, credit default swaps, and overextending their equity positions dramatically. And I'm afraid that is something that is going to slip through the cracks, and something that we ought to be very concerned about, and I am. I am really concerned with Portugal, Spain, and Italy. Their banks are in deep, deep trouble, and I don't know if the EU has the resources to bail them out. I'm concerned about a potential bank failure somewhere in that. Of course, Italy is the bigger issue, you know, we have to look at that and understand it's the third largest economy in the Eurozone. It's a very big economy, and they've got a failing banking system. And Spain and Portugal, maybe Spain a little bit more of an issue. Portugal won't be the end of the world, but it could. It is going to have a dramatic impact on what happens. So we've got to be thinking about all of that as well. And they're the kinds of things that I'm going to be looking at for the rest of the year and watching very closely as I make some recommendations. So all in all, though, it's going to be hard for me to get out of my optimism mode. I think if I do, then you ought to be concerned. But if I do, it's probably going to be as a result of a geopolitical event. So having said that, I feel real good about 2018 still. I think it's going to be a good year for us. I think this is an opportunity to take advantage of a rising market, but opportunity to take advantage. You cannot sometimes take an advantage by just getting all your money in. That's not how you take advantage of it. Take advantage of it in a small way. I'm going to spend a lot of time this year trying to recondition everybody's brain and keep everybody's feet firmly planted on earth and help them understand that this could turn on a dime. And we've got to be cautiously, even though things look good, we still have to be cautiously optimistic. Let's not be just all in optimistic at all costs, or we're going to get in trouble. Of course, if everybody is, the whole economy is going to get in trouble. I just don't want our partners getting in trouble. So I ask you to keep a close ear to some of the things I'm saying and some of the things that we're trying to get across, because it's critically important. You cannot do that. You know, I was on the 700 Club a couple weeks ago, and I was talking to Gordon Robertson, Pat's son. I was on his show, and he was talking about the book, Fear of Money. And he read the book. He actually read it from cover to cover. It was very obvious that he read it. At the end of that book, I don't know if any of you saw the interview, but towards the end of the interview, he said, you know, Dan, I read this book, and I've gone through it, and everybody needs to read it. But he said, this book is really about the heart, isn't it? It's not about money. You know, he's the only guy that has ever said that to me, that has read that book, and has interviewed me about that book. Maybe he's the only guy that's ever really read it, and that's exactly what it's about. That's why I wrote it. That's the heart in which I wrote it for, to try to change people's hearts. And let me tell you what I mean by that. You all, I don't know where you come from, I don't know what kind of mindset you come from when it comes to investing. But I say this particularly to the young people listening. If your portfolio is making 18% and everybody around you is making 28%, 30%, you need to be at a place where you are praising God for the 18%. That's it. No other place. If you wish and want and desire and chase after the 28%, you will get in trouble. Trust me. And so will those around you that are 28 and 30%. You will fall a little bit. They will fall a whole lot. So my book was about understanding certain principles that can help you change your heart and the way you think of things. Our treasure is where our heart is. That's Jesus that said that in Matthew, not me. And we've got to make sure that our treasure is never in our portfolios, but it is in pleasing God, and it is making a good return for ourselves and our family. And if you're consistent and you're doing the right things, you will do just fine. And, you know, I want us to not get overly enthusiastic about this market because we have seen such a tear. How many of you have heard almost every day since, October, I'll say, almost every day somebody saying, you know, I know the market's at this high and it keeps going, but, you know, I've been on the sidelines and I've missed out so much and, you know, I got to get in. How many times? Everybody on this call has heard that. And we are losing sight of a lot of things. And it's funny because I heard somebody yesterday, or you might have heard it, called me and say, I know the market's at a high, but I feel like I got to get in. Well, you just said it was at an all-time high. Don't be so anxious to get in. And, you know, I almost used my famous line that was a famous line of John Paul Getty, who was once the richest man in the world, who said, if you can see the bandwagon, you missed it. So we have to always, I every day question, did we miss it? If you're, I know I didn't miss it, I've been invested. None of you should have missed it if you truly followed what I said, because what I've always said is I've never had a time where I was 100% cash. I've never been there. I've been as high as 50, but not 100%. A lot of you went 100%. I don't blame you. That's fine. That's okay. But I've never been there. But if you followed my asset allocation models, if you followed with me for the last 20 years or the last 10 years or the last 5 years, you made money. Did you make as much? No, you made money. Did you make 30? No, but you made money and you made good money because 50% of your assets at least were invested and you made good money. So if 50% is making 15% and your other 50% was making nothing sitting in a money market account, you made 7.5% on your portfolio. That's good. That's not bad. That's never been bad in any circles. That's great. But everybody around me is making, you know, 15, 20, 30%. I only made 7.5%. It's okay. You made 7.5%, and if you erred, if you made a mistake, if there was an error, you made it on a conservative side, on a prudent standpoint, there's nothing wrong with that, and you still made 7.5%. It's a good thing. So, look, all I'm saying to you is we still want to be cautiously optimistic, but I think it's a good time to be optimistic. I have said to young people that have called me, man, you got to be almost all in and you got to be aggressive. Don't be, well, you know, I'm nervous of risk. You know, you're 28 years old, forget risk. It's out the door. If this is IRA money, you've got 30 years, you're going to do good, you know. So, and when I talk like that on the phone, I am expecting those people trust me. And know that, you know, I don't have some agenda. I'm not trying to, you know, get, you know, I'm not making any money from them making money. I'm not even going to be alive when they recognized what they did. So we've got to be still prudent, wise, cautious, but we need a heart check every once in a while. And we've got to understand that we are laying treasures up in heaven. We are not laying up treasures here. We are trying to help as God entrusts us to be a good steward, to provide for our needs, to provide for our needs. So the Bible says God's going to provide for our needs. He's not going to provide for our wants. He's providing for our needs, and that's what's important. And we're not called to bury our talents in the sand. That means we're not really called to have 100% of our money making 0.4% in a money market account. We're called to, you know, try to do a little better in that. You know, even if it's a 5-year CD making 3%, we're called to be as a prudent, wise, good steward. So this is going to be a year that I'm going to be preaching a lot about a heart change. It's just keeping it real, conservative, and being very satisfied with how well you're doing. Understand that what somebody else is doing is not any kind of indication of how well you're doing. How well you're doing is your mindset of how well you're doing, not somebody else's. So I do want to take a few questions. If you have some questions, the strategies that are coming about, any of the I'm not going to give you a lot of information on one of the strategy changes, but on the portfolio tracker, on the asset allocation models, and those kinds of things, be willing to do that. I think there was a number of people that have saw a few things that tweaked. My asset allocation models were changed. Somebody said I was 10% short in one portfolio. It was because I had so my administrative software is very annoyingly complex. So unfortunately, I add 10% somewhere. I got to add it in two other places, and there was a couple things like that I missed, where I might have missed it altogether in all places. Somebody gave me a heads up about a stock that I had sitting healthcare. It was sitting in healthcare. It was supposed to be in another sector in industrials, but it was in healthcare. Well, it wasn't even finished. I didn't have it. It was a new stock that I'd entered on my broad list. And obviously, I don't know what happened, but obviously I entered it. I got a phone call or something happened in the middle of it. And I never did finish it and go back to it. So that's all it was. So I appreciate those. I never get bothered by somebody saying, hey, just, you know, by the way, somebody pointed out to me a particular stock that may have not been biblically responsible. I gave, we emailed back and forth, and I gave them my guy's perspective of why it is, and we're still looking into it. So he may be right, but we'll find out here another day or two. All right, let me go to calls. Yes. Is there a caller there? Should be.
Hello?
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Hey, Dan. On your broad list, since the website has been updated,
yes.
I guess there's no way of telling whether those stocks.
I'm sorry, I lost you. You there? There's no way of telling those stocks what?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. I'll try it again. I lost it.
Okay. Real quick, your broad list, how do you know if the stocks that are under there have been stocks that are listed as holds, or are there stocks that you requested that we sell since the website's been updated?
Yeah, so if it's on the broad list, it's a hold. So it's always going to be on a hold.
Okay.
If it's a sell, if it was a stock that I asked to sell, then you would have gotten notification about that, and it would be listed for a few weeks on my commentary section as a sell. Once it comes off my commentary section as a sell, then it's going to be back on my broad list as a hold, but theoretically nobody should own it. So
okay.
I'm not, because you should never be buying anything from my broad list. So nobody's going to buy it, or nobody owns it because it was listed as a sell. If you came into the picture after it was a sell, then it still should matter because it's a hold, and you can't hold it if you don't own it, and you're not going to buy it because it's on my broad list, not on my buy list.
What if we have bought it when you put it on the buy list, and then it's been taken off the buy list? About the dollar cost averaging in on it.
But it's not a sell? Just been taken off my buy list?
Yes. But
then you keep adding to it.
Okay.
So let me, I'm glad you said that. So let me, because I should have been clear on this. So, and this is on videos and stuff on my website, but if you own a stock, let's say you're dollar cost averaging in XYZ stock and you're doing it over the next 6 months and you started doing it when it was on my sell list and it's off, that's fine. That doesn't matter. It goes off my sell list, you continue your plan. When you own a stock, as a matter of fact, somebody called me today about NCR stock. If you own a stock and you want to dollar cost average down or buy more of it or dollar cost average into it, you can do that anytime. So think of it this way. Everything on my list pertains to money that you are investing for the first time. If you own a stock, then you buy. I can't tell you how many times I've added to some of my positions in my own IRA this in the last few weeks with some of the utilities that I own that have not been on my buy list, but they're down considerably from what I bought them at. So I've taken a chance to add to them. So you can always dollar cost average. You're going to always add if you're on a schedule. Same thing with the mutual fund. You have a mutual fund. You it was on my buy list. You just keep doing it until you get all your money in.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for that. Great question. Yes. Next caller.
Hi, Dan. I've been a holder a couple of years now. I'm about 71. I'm a Christian. I'm pretty forward thinking. I used to be a stockbroker. I don't mind. I'm pretty aggressive, I guess, in my nature. I rode the market up and down three times without selling, just stayed in, and I swore I was going to sell it off if because I was older and I was going to get out when the market was high. So I did, and it just kept going and going. And I have no clue. I'm just so frustrated about getting back in. I know I should be in at least some way. I'm not totally out of the market, but most of it I am. I've probably got about $300,000 or $400,000 that could be invested. What would you suggest? Would you suggest pullbacks every time, or should I start leaking in a little at a time? What do you got? Any suggestions?
Yeah, I would start putting in a little at a time. I mean, I really think that we're at a place that I don't think we can wait for a pullback, because it might not come for another year and a half, and we might miss some run-up. Could come tomorrow, don't get me wrong. But I would say if you've got X amount of your portfolio, say 20% of your portfolio, 30%, that you want to start averaging in, I would do it over the next, let's say you say, I'm going to do it every 6 months, or I'm sorry, every month I'm going to put 1/6 in over 6 months of that 30%. I would do it no matter what. The only thing I would change, that if we have a dramatic pullback and now that stock is below what you first put it in, then I would finish up and put the rest of it in then. But other than that, I would just dollar cost average in for a period of time. And I think you got to start.
Okay. No, that's great. Thank you so much for your help.
You're welcome. Let me see. Yes.
Hey, Dan. This is Dawn in Virginia.
Hey, Dawn.
I'm a little bit confused about the international funds and emerging market funds. I've been looking at your allocation models, and I was also listening earlier. And so I also have some concerns about the dollar and the world economy and such. So I have avoided getting into any kind of international funds or stocks. And so I'm a little bit confused, because I hear you today saying you're pretty concerned about that, more concerned than you've ever been. And yet they're still in your allocation models. Now, for my situation, I'm 48. I'm still working. I've got private IRA money and TSP, so I'm looking at the big picture. Can you address that for me?
Yeah, I mean, I am concerned about currency. As I said, mostly in reference, Dawn, to Asia and what is going on there. I'm not concerned about. I think that everybody, if you notice on my allocations, for example, emerging market and Israel fund and those international funds, I have little concern in those areas. I think emerging market, my one concern about emerging markets, the commodities are going to hurt emerging markets. Geopolitical events can sometimes help emerging markets if it's geopolitical events from world major economies. But I think the emerging markets has had a development opportunity like never before, and I think that's why the last 3 years they've done so well. And I really believe that they're going to continue to do well over the next 10 years. I'm not necessarily saying that they're going to continue the run they've had this year as they did last year, for instance. But I do think that emerging markets is a place that anybody, you know, that's got, you know, 10, 15, 20 years almost has to have a small percentage in. I would say the same thing with the international markets, because at the very same time that I might have some currency issues, the international markets that are dealing with developed now nations, not emerging markets, are dealing with developed nations, have lagged behind America. And they are, we're starting to see since, I'm going to say since June or so, we started to see a change from a political perspective in those even developed nations in what they are doing and what they're thinking. And I'm talking primarily from a central banking standpoint. And I think they're going to start, this is, you know, they're going to catch up with us. I think they're going to catch up with us, which is going to be very good for us in the long run. And I think that there's an opportunity there. My concern with the developed nations' international markets, as I already mentioned, is the financial sector and the banks. I don't know how long Spain, Portugal, and Italy can limp along. And I don't know, as the economies get stronger in those developed nations, I think the central bank is going to turn to local revolts if they do anything from a bailout perspective. And I think that's very, very possible, being led by Germany. So I think that it's going to be very difficult for European Central Bank to do much about Spain, Portugal, and Italy. I'm not so concerned about the negative impact that's going to have on international markets. I'm more concerned about the impact that's going to have on American banks. And remember, the financial sector is about 27% of our markets is going to be impacted by the financial markets. That's a lot. That is a big, big chunk. It doesn't sound, well, it's only 27%. No, that's big. So that would have a dramatic impact on the market. So I'm more concerned from those banking perspectives, not those individual countries. It would be devastating, but I'm concerned because of what it might do to our financial markets. So I think that it's part of a well-diversified plan because, you know, you've got to be one of the best ways to cover currency risk is to be involved in different currencies. So I think that, and then from an inflation perspective as well, I think that anybody that's got time needs to have some in international emerging markets. And I don't really know that Israel is a part of that international market. And it's not an emerging market, that's for sure. But it's just a very, very strong economy. And, you know, they're going to go through some troubles too. So I don't have a huge confidence because they've got problems in that they don't have enough workers. You know, they got full employment and it's a thriving economy that keeps growing. So, you know, they're desperately trying to get immigrants in so they can have some workers because they really struggle. But that's going to hurt them. It's going to hurt the shekel a little bit from a currency perspective. So I just think we've got to have coverage. You notice all my percentages in those areas are very low. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, I think we've got to have some coverage in there, and I think it's just prudent. See, I don't have the currency problem from the U.S. currency like a lot of other people do. I just, you know, I have been very much a proponent, as you have heard, Dawn, you know, in the Fed raising interest rates. I'm the only one in my among my friends. I still have friends. I from when I was on Wall Street 40 years ago, I still have friends up there. I still have guys that I talk to on a regular basis that we razz each other on a very regular basis. And you know, I have I don't have the concerns that some do, and some friends and some people I know do on the U.S. currency. But they all, nobody wants to see interest rate hikes. I do. And I said to a friend of mine that's a senior VP at Merrill Lynch just day before yesterday, I said, is that Sunday? What's today, Tuesday? Yeah, Sunday afternoon. And I just said, you're wrong. You know, you're going to be wrong, and you're going to find out that I'm right. You're just so wrong about your viewpoint about raising interest rates. And but they can't think beyond the financial benefit that they personally receive from lower interest rates. And that's what skews everybody's analytics. And we are in a time now where nothing skews it more than that, and it's a terrible place. I don't believe anybody anymore because I know too much of how much money they've made from certain situations. So, of course, that's what they're for, because they think if they say it enough, it's going to happen and that's going to be good for them. But I believe in a strong dollar currency. And look, if we have a strong dollar, we're the strongest currency in the world, bar none. And we, you know, you can say, well, it's a fiat currency, it's this, that, it's the other thing. It's the strongest currency in the world. Not even China, Japan can't even hold a candle to our currency. And as long as we're the strongest currency, we are always going to be the flight to safety when things fall apart. It's always going to be us. And that puts us in a very good position. And so I think that there are other forces that are more concerning to me that are outside real monetary forces. They would be forces like the IMF, the UN, the Development Bank. They would be things that are gaining power from a political perspective that I might have some concern about. But, you know, I'm not concerned. I don't have the same concern about the U.S. dollar. And I don't have any concern about protecting ourselves from a collapse of the U.S. dollar, because there's no such thing as protecting ourselves from a collapse of the U.S. dollar. There is no such thing. It's not going to happen. You can read all the books and talk to everybody in the world. But if anybody thinks, I'm not talking about you, I'm talking in general, but if anybody thinks they're going to protect themselves against a collapsing dollar, they're living in some kind of twilight zone, because it isn't going to happen. And, you know, I made a joke back in 2009 and 10 when people were talking about this all the time. You want to protect yourself? I would get out now while you have a little bit of money and buy the absolute best, most comfortable, supportive shoes you can buy, because we're all going to be standing in the same soup line for hours on end. There is no way you're going to protect yourself from that. So, you know, that's, and that, it sounds goofy, but it's just true from every aspect when you break it down monetarily. So I'm not, you know, I don't want to see any international or any emerging market collapse, which is always a risk, particularly in emerging markets, collapse from, and usually from a dictatorship or geopolitical event. I don't want to see that because obviously for moral reasons, I don't want to see that. But that's going to have, you know, that's going to be rough on the markets there, obviously, but it's going to have little impact on the majority of our portfolios here, in my opinion, and it's not going to trigger an event. What is going to trigger an event that is going to have a dramatic impact is going to be moving towards end times. when there is that person, as the Bible speaks about, that brings peace to the Middle East, and that person is saying, for the sake of unity, as has been said by Christine Lagarde for the last 7 years, that we need unity, and the only thing that's going to give us unity is a one currency, you know, is currency parity, is the only thing that's going to, they're the kinds of things that it's going to come out of something like that. It's not going to come out of Bitcoin. It's not going to come out of America or any developed nation. It's going to come from the UN. It's going to come from the IMF. That is going to convince people that the entire world will be singing around the campfire holding hands if we just have one currency. And I believe that's going to usher in the one world government. And time. So, but now, you know, so I'm not too concerned. I know I went off on a huge tangent there, but nonetheless, I really think that what we need to be concerned about is protecting ourselves, and the absolute best way we can protect ourselves and the money God's given us is to be as diversified as we possibly can, and having a little bit in a lot of different sectors, and trying not to get too hung up on one particular sector, whether it be a part of the world or whether it be, you know, one particular thing, oil or gold or anything like that. So I think diversification is what's going to help us in the long term.
That's wonderful. I really appreciate the clarification and all the info you gave.
Thank you, Dawn. I appreciate you saying that. I'm sorry for the long tangent. But, you know, folks, one of the reasons why I take questions is because it spurs me on to have some kind of coachable moments. And I love my conference calls because I'm free to say whatever I want to say. I have a lot more freedom to do it because I'm talking to like-minded people that understand me and kind of where I'm coming from a little bit more than 50,000 people that might be listening for the first time ever. So a little bit different. Thank you, Dawn. God bless you. I appreciate it.
You too.
Change of point of motion. All of a sudden, go with the
I'm sorry, but you're going to have to put your call back in the queue. I see what I did. I pushed end session instead of next. Oh, brother. I've only been doing this for 3 or 4 years. I'll get it anytime now. Okay. Somebody's there?
Yeah, Dan.
Yes.
You hear me okay? Yeah, Dominic.
Yep,
couple quick questions. Where do you see oil going this year? And also, I own some shares in Chicago Bridge and Iron, and it looks like they're in a merger with McDermott. Should I hold on to those shares?
Yeah, I would hold on to those shares. I think they are. That's an organization. The merged organization is going to be an organization that's going to benefit from infrastructure and some of the other projects. So I feel good about that. I would hang on to it. As far as did I lose your oil? So I think oil is going to go to, you know, probably level off sometime between now and the end of the year. I hope somewhere around 71. I hope it's not 80. Most analysts are predicting $80. I hope that's not the case. But I haven't been this way for about 20 years. I've become a little cynical about the numbers coming out of oil. So I hope I'm wrong. So I'm trying not to talk about it too much, but I think that if oil gets up past 75 and looking like it's going to continue to go up, it's only going to happen as a result of what could be some manipulation, and I'm concerned a little bit about that. I am already starting to get concerned about that because for 3 years when everybody was begging for frackers to stop adding rigs, they weren't listening. Now nobody's talking about it, and they're listening. So I used to be happy when I saw the rig count go down. Now I am getting concerned that the rig count is going down. And what are we hearing and reading as the rig count goes down? Oil's maintaining its 2.5-year high, primarily based on the rig count going down. And so we don't have a supply issue in America. I don't believe we have a supply issue. The issue has always been about demand. And there is always the possibility that demand could realistically far outpace our ability for the supply to keep up. That's certainly a possibility. I would love to have that problem. But I just can't imagine how that could happen. So I'm afraid that, you know, we could have a supply issue where supply is down and demand is high. But I'm not, I find it difficult, and I'm going to believe that's real. And but it doesn't matter whether I believe it or not. It only matters that if it happens. And if that happens, we're going to see $80-$85 a barrel oil. But I'm trying to be optimistic and say I don't think it's going to go higher in 72 at the top. But I've been right for the last 3 years, so I'm hoping I'm going to be right. Now, I would like to see some balance come into natural gas. That would be wonderful. But we'll have to see. So that's where I think it's going to be, we're going to see that reflected in the pumps. Unfortunately, that's why I've been talking lately about, you know, gas prices, higher gas prices already up there. Yesterday, diesel fuel, because that's kind of what I care about most. But diesel fuel was $3.35 yesterday. Today, as I was getting to the office from the studio, the same station was $3.45. There's no rhyme or reason for that. It's really annoying me. But I think that there's been a lot of missed out profits and a lot of issues and a lot of balance sheets that need to be shored up as quickly as possible. So, if you got oil stocks, keep them. Because it'll be good for stocks. It's just going to be bad for our wallet. All right. So hopefully that's helped you a little bit. Let me see.
Taking my call and bless the ministry. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. My gosh. I think that's new. I don't think that button's ever been there before. Okay. Okay. Let's try this again. Yes.
Dan.
Can you hear me? Yes.
This is Jeff. Appreciate everything you do.
Thanks, Jeff.
And thanks for the succession planning you were talking about. I was actually going to call you today and ask you whether you still enjoy getting up every morning doing this work, or is it getting old? So.
Oh, no, it's not getting old. I'm loving it. People say to me all the time, when are you going to retire? I said, I've been retired since 1998. What are you talking about? You know, this is the greatest thing, and my wife would shoot me if I was around every day. So I don't want to get shot, because I don't think she could take me around all the time. She laughs about that, but I think it's true. So, but I love what I do. I appreciate this opportunity that God has given me, and He'll let me know when it's time to go, I guess, but I'm sure not feeling it yet.
Well, we really do appreciate it, and it means a lot to me, and I know for many others. The question I have, I got two stocks that I'm down on, and I know when we originally get in them, we're in for the long term, and I'm good with that. I just wonder if some fundamentals may have changed and we may be better off. The one that's probably hitting me the worst is Vista Outdoors. I've dollar cost averaged on it once before, and I was just wondering, is it something that you would just continue to stick out for the long, or is it one of those things that you might sell and get into some of these 8 for 18s that might do better faster?
Let me what's the other stock before I answer that one?
Chesapeake, which, I mean, I feel pretty good about that one. I was just wondering, you know, when it might be a good time to, you know, dollar cost average on it. But I'm down about 60% on it, so.
Yeah. So Chesapeake, you know, I think they're in the bottom range now. I think it's about time for them to start turning around. I really have to tell you that I expected by now, well, forget now, I expected 6 months ago to be here at Chesapeake announcing a merger. I was fully expecting that. Thought almost for certain it was going to happen. I'm shocked that it hasn't yet. That scares me a little bit about Chesapeake, because I'm thinking that some folks know something that we're not seeing in the public. But I would hang on to the Chesapeake. Vista Outdoors is killing me, as it is everybody else. Vista Outdoor, you know, when I put a sell order on, I don't know how long you've been a partner, but I put a sell order in on Smith & Wesson some years ago. So it was on my buy list sometime somewhere between 11 and 12 to 13. 11 to 13. I put a sell order in at 26 on Smith & Wesson. And I left that sell order in there, you know, down to 20, 22, 21. So that was great. The merger, I felt, that created that high run-up with Vista, you know, when Vista Outdoor, I thought was a really good merger. From a perspective, I'm thinking, okay, here's a major ammunition manufacturer, major outdoor, you know, creating an enormous amount of, you know, hunting supplies and gears. And so I thought it was kind of a natural. But when Smith & Wesson went up to $28, I said, what is it in Smith & Wesson that these guys find so attractive that they're paying this much money for the stock? Well, I should have followed my gut instinct and realized that they were just being stupid. We were sold a bill of goods because they paid way too much for it, and they've been paying dearly for that. They cannot get their act together, and I'm very disappointed that we're still at this place with it. So my goal has been on Vista Outdoors is to wait until March, and all the hunting seasons are over. I haven't been able to get a decent number out of them for November yet. I'm hoping that the year-end statement is going to give me some insights. I'm not trying to figure out at this point whether Vista Outdoors is going to be a hold. I'm trying to figure out whether it's going to go bankrupt. And so that's kind of where I am with it. And I'm not going to know until I see this year-end financial statement and get the full disclosures on that financial statement. So I got to tell you, you know, I'm definitely concerned. I'm not selling mine. I'll probably go bankrupt with it, but that doesn't mean, you know, anybody else should do that. But I would not have a problem if you're on the younger side. You got that 8 to 10 years. I think that there's probably some stocks out there that can make this money up to you a lot quicker then Vista Outdoor is going to make it up to you. So I think that, and there's a lot of people listening to this call that are in the exact same boat as you. So the question is, do you shift your money, whatever you got left in Vista, into something that's going to go up, you know, 20-30% in the next 4 or 5 years? And I think we're probably to that point. So, you know, it might be something. Is it in an IRA account?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would definitely consider at least moving half of it out of there. I don't know how much you have, but moving it out of there. I just can't, you know, my theory is right now that if they go bankrupt, they're going to sell. Before they go bankrupt, they're going to sell Smith & Wesson. You know, move it on, get it out of there. It's too valuable of a brand. I can't imagine that they're going to include that in a bankruptcy. But, I don't know what that'll mean to the stock that we have if they do it. And there is a possibility that in March they could pull it out. I mean, because they have an awful lot of cheap money that they can get. They've got some of it. So if they have a good hunting season, they could have a good, you know, the problem is Cabela's and Bass Pro Shop has put a hurting on them because they're not selling anything, you know, and they're not buying, and that's who they're supplying to, you know, so they've just really taken a beating. But we'll have to wait and see a little bit longer, but I wouldn't be have a problem if you moved it out, moved it over.
Thank you very much, Dan. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call, Jeff. All right, let's see. Push that red button. Yes.
Hi, Dan. This is Randy and Susan.
Hey, Susan, Randy. I won't say hi to Randy, but I'll say hi to you, Susan.
Thank you very much. Hey, we had a FISM question, and when y'all purchase a building for FISM, will you do it kind of like the Hope Center where you'll have other ministries in there? Or
it's something that we've thought about doing a Hope Center kind of thing up this way. But we have a different problem here that June Hunt had, and that is our land is incredibly expensive. So for, you know, if we were going to do something like that to buy, you know, the building that we might buy to spend $1 million on would cost about, you know, $300,000 in most parts of the country. And, you know, so that's the dilemma that we're facing. We have talked about it, and I've even talked to everybody at the Hope Center to get some feedback on what they did, but and how they did it and how it's worked out for them. The other thing is we don't have we don't live in an area like Atlanta, Dallas, you know, places where there is a lot of ministries. So I don't know that we could fill the place if we did something like that. So it's really tough, Susan. It's really a tough call to make. I don't know. We're really struggling. Our problem with a building, I'd go way out and build a building. I wouldn't have a problem with that. But we can't go anywhere that we don't have Fios, Verizon Fios internet, because it's the fiber optics. And we need the speed of that, or we'd have to buy a satellite, which we can't, you know, that would be ridiculous. But so we can't go anywhere that there's not fiber optics. And unfortunately, all the fiber optics is in the populated areas that are the most expensive. And so we're really in a bad way. So Kay, one of my producers, or you guys know Kay, you met him at a retreat, but you know, he says that, you know, he swears that the sad part is in another 2 or 3 years, there's going to be technology that's probably, we're not going to need the fiber optics anymore. So, you know, that's the, to it, you know, we could go anywhere. So That's the problems that we're facing. So we're really struggling with what we're doing and just praying that, you know, is this God where God keeps giving us these things that we're doing, these different opportunities and what we're doing and the things that we're producing and developing in the ministry. And, you know, we just don't have the space, and rental property is so expensive too. So I don't know. We're trying to, you know, I don't want any debt. We don't have any debt. Don't plan on ever having any. So we're juggling all that as well. So it's tough. So,
wow.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll be able to do that or not. We're going to be just praying about it and pray that God will give us some wisdom and insights into what we're doing. I know Kay has been talking to a couple of big networks. So he's talked to Fox News and spent a lot of time up there talking to them about their technologies, but, you know, hasn't got a whole lot of insights. And he's going out to a conference, technology conference, to see what's on the horizon in March. So that'll give us some insights too as to whether we should wait it out or not. So who would have thought I'd be at mercy of Verizon, of all people? Oh my gosh. So, but that's where we are. So
we'll keep praying that God will open those doors.
Please do it, Susan. Thank you so much, man. Thank you, Randy. Sure, appreciate you guys. Thank you. Thank you for all your support, man. We appreciate you so much. Let me go to, let's see who's next. Yes.
Yes, Dan, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I know you've talked with other senior citizens about investing, but my question is, all the investing that I'm doing, and I'm trying to follow your asset allocation model for my age group, I'm 75, and all my investing is in my IRA. And unfortunately, years ago, I didn't hear you, and I didn't know enough about, I should have had a Roth, but it's a traditional. So I wonder if I should even be investing at all.
Well, are you doing investing inside your IRA? Like, do you have investment? Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I think that one of the things you ought to be really thinking about is, obviously, you're taking your minimum required distribution every year. Do you take any more than that?
Yes.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you taking more than you need and putting it over in your savings?
Occasionally I do. I have a small CD with CC, you know, the Christian community.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then I've got my cushion for emergencies, you know, the $9,000. But I wonder, you know, if it's even wise. I'm doing some of the Timothy that you have for my, you know, on the pie chart. And I'm doing preferreds, and I'm following, and I've got Westar, I've got some energy and a couple of energy. So I've got ConocoPhillips, and then my Vanguard, my VIP, I've had for a number of years, and it's done very well, very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking about, you've talked about taking profits, so I wonder if I should just go ahead, take my profits. And by profits, are you referring just to dividends and interest, or are you also referring to, you know, the increases in value?
No, I'm talking. I'm referring to the increase in values as well.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about taking those profits and doing some CDs. I can't be very risky since I'm a single person.
I think you should do that for certain. I think you should take out whatever you can bear paying tax on.
Right.
Because someday you have heirs that are going to get this money.
Yeah, I do.
And you would be doing them a great service by you paying some tax on it, and getting that over into your CDs, so that you know when they receive it, they're gonna get all of it instead of some of it. So I mean, I think that is something that you should do. I wouldn't even hesitate. You know, I would either take all your profits, all your gains at the absolute minimum, and you know, start moving that over. You can put it in CDs wherever your IRA is too, I would assume. I don't, where is it? Is it at Vanguard?
It's Fidelity.
Your brokerage? It's Fidelity, yeah. So you could do that there, but I would like to see you get some of that money, get as much money out of there as you can over the next couple of years and move it over into CDs. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think if you're risk adverse, and you know, you're doing fine, and I would suggest that you do that. I think that's a great idea. Ladder those CDs. You've heard me talk about it, you know, so every 6 months, one's coming due, and you're renewing those. And I think that makes great sense. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
What do you think about the community credit? What is it? Credit union.
Yeah, Christian Community Credit.
Exactly.
About the what?
About the laddering.
They're laddering. Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great. I love what they're doing with that, and they also have a CD that you can change the rate on. If the rates do go up terribly high, did they tell you about that? Sometimes they don't tell you about that, but they do. They do have a CD you can change the rate on once.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I think their laddering program is excellent. It's an excellent program.
Should I continue?
Yeah, I would do.
I'm sorry. Should I continue to keep these other stocks and bonds that I have according to your plan for my age group?
Well,
here's the thing.
You got to keep the preferreds. Do you have individual bonds?
No, I don't.
No. You have like a bond mutual fund or something?
Well,
I'm not talking about the preferreds.
Yeah, well, I have preferreds, but I also have some Timothy's. I've got the fixed income with Timothy, and I've got the Israel with Timothy, and then I've got with Vanguard, I've got the VIPs. Those are the only.
Yeah. I mean, I would keep those, and I would keep the preferreds, but those preferreds are going to get called. And when they get called, I would take the money. I wouldn't roll them over in another one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, I would just let them go until they get called. And then, of course, you're getting the income. Take the income. But I wouldn't sell those because you'll take a loss if you sell them.
Okay. And I'm having my income sent quarterly. Is that wise? This way?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that is fine. That's wise. I'm glad you're doing that. That's fine. Yep.
Okay. I've got PPL in Westar. And AES, hang on to those, public storage.
The public storage, that's a preferred, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I would hang on to those.
Okay, all right. Well, I appreciate so much what you do, as everyone says, and thank you for your help.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad you got through. Yes. Somebody's
Hi,
on there. Hi.
Hi, this is Myra. I have a couple questions. I'll make
it. All right, Myra.
Okay, so you're doing research on NTR, and mine is down. It was potash, obviously. It's down about 30%. I was just wondering how close you are to coming to a conclusion about that, because I was thinking I might shift that even though I'd lose. So some money to the 8 to 18, 8 for 18?
Well, I'm definitely at the place where I think I want everybody to hold that.
Okay.
They're still holding some information. It's driving me crazy, but that's just Canada. So, but I'm probably, in my opinion, I think that kind of goes with my commodity call, thinking commodities are going to be a little bit better. But I would probably keep it. But I, at the same time, if you're ready, if you want to move over to something a little bit bigger and a little bit more stable for the long term, I wouldn't have a problem with you selling that out.
Okay, and then I have some HSBC, which is a financial, and
it's
paying a good 4.2% yield. I know it's an international. So what do you think of that one? Is it biblically responsible?
Yeah, it's not biblically responsible.
Okay.
It's paying. Are you dependent upon? Are you needing that income? Is that something that you're kind of dependent?
We're in for income. My husband's 67 and I'm 65. But I would not lose if I sold it. I think I'm up like $400 or $500 or $600 on it, so I wouldn't have a loss. I could shift it maybe to a utility, or what do you think? I have some utilities. I have maybe 5 of them.
Which ones do you have?
I have AES, PPL, let's see, something Atlantic. Let's see.
NY, yeah, I know which one it is.
NYLD, I think it is.
Yeah.
Some of the ones that have been on your buy list.
Yeah.
So, AY, PPL, let's see, Pattern Energy, PEGI, and NRG Yield.
Mm-hmm.
Those.
Yeah, I mean, I would be okay with, if you're going to move it to PP&L.
Uh-huh.
That would be the one that that would be where I would move it. I mean, it had a rough year. It shouldn't have, just because of selling. It's had a good start to the year. It's up, a couple percent this year. They're paying roughly about 5%. I would rather see you move it there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, then I would still be getting the income off that money. Good.
Exactly. You'd be getting the same income, so you wouldn't be losing the income, and the price are the same. So I think that would be good place to put it. I feel real good about that stock.
Yeah. I have a couple more questions. Do you have time?
Sure. Yep.
I was a teacher, and I moved my 403B to a traditional IRA, and I took out, unfortunately, Pacific Life Annuity. It's paying like 6% until I start taking money from it. I've only had it a year and a half. Can you move that to an investment account without penalties, do you know?
No, you cannot. If you move it, you're going to pay a surrender charge.
Right. Okay.
So I would just leave it. I would just hang in there with it.
Okay, and I have just one more. We bought some bonds. We kind of did. We had 150 and we 1,000, and we put about almost half in bonds, mostly muni, tax-free, municipal bonds.
Yes.
All paying over 3%, and mm-hmm. some are stretched out all the way to 2035. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple that are pretty long term. I would consider that pretty long term, considering
yes.
our around 2035. Do you think it would be wise to just sell those and invest them instead in utilities and preferreds?
I think it would be better.
Mm-hmm.
I think you would get more income.
Okay.
My concern is you may take a loss in selling those.
So far, their value is more than what we paid for them.
But when you sell them, they're going to give you a bid.
Oh, okay.
So they've got to find a buyer. But I wouldn't go and sell them all at once. But I would start, you know, feeling it out and seeing what it's
okay.
Seeing how it goes, and so, start with the longest maturity ones.
Yes, I was thinking that, and we're with Edward Jones with that. So I wouldn't know how to do that on my own through Schwab. So I was just going to see what the commission is, because that was the other reasons we're self-directed it through Schwab. We aren't paying that 2% commission or whatever, so we need to look into the commission for selling too, I think.
Yeah, there's going to be a pretty hefty commission. You might want to transfer it to Schwab first and then sell it.
I've talked.
You can't?
Yes, I can. I can transfer those, and we didn't. And the reason we didn't, he said that it's a little tricky selling. And so I don't know if Schwab would be able to help us sell it. I'm not.
Oh, yeah, Schwab will sell it. They'll be able to do it. I mean, it's no more tricky at Schwab than it is with them.
Oh, okay, just less money.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just going to be a lot less money on you, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Very.
Yeah, so I would definitely transfer those and then sell it at Schwab.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we have about 10 of them, and I think the ones like that are so far out, even though they're getting over around 3 to 3.5%, and they are, you know, tax-free munis, which is nice.
Yes. Yeah, it is nice, and that's the other thing that I would just caution you on before you sell them is, I know they're far out, but at the same time, if you're doing it for the income, so, you know, that 3% is probably equivalent to, you know, almost 4% in taxable kinds of income.
Sure.
So, you know, I think that the one upside to it is that it's going to be very stable income. There's not going to be any, there's very, very little risk in
right.
those muni bonds compared to what you might put it in. The other may be paying you more, but there may be a little bit more risk.
Sure.
And so I don't know. I would really think about whether how important it is to get maybe another 1% out of that for the trade off of taking on a little bit more risk.
Right. I get that.
You know, so I mean I'm leaning towards, based on what you told me, since you have so many other things, you might want to just hang on to them, but
sure.
If, you know, and they'll mature when you guys mature.
Yes.
They'll go into your estate, you know, and then they'll be able to sell them for the par value, and they'll be good.
Right, and they aren't qualified. They're.
Yeah, better yet. Yeah, better yet. Right. Yeah, I would. I don't know. I'd hesitate to sell them.
Okay. Very, very good.
You still might want to move them to Schwab, though, just to get them all in one place, everything in one place. But
well, we have some annuities with.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, so
right.
actually
That's
right. makes it kind of easy that way. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, we were fearful of the stock market until the last, since we've become members with you. And now I don't have that fear at all. It's just, you know.
Oh, great. That's great.
Yeah, very good about being in some preferreds and utilities and a few things for growth, which I've seen come up, which is such a blessing. And the biggest thing is just being biblically responsible. And
yeah,
I'm just so glad that you mentioned that about Gordon Robertson, seeing that your book was about the heart of the person investing, and it's not about the money. That's beautiful to hear.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm glad you called. I sure do appreciate it.
Well, I'd like to have my son become a member. Can I have him join and I pay the membership?
Yeah.
for him?
You could just, yeah, you could just pay for it and then use his information, like his email address.
Okay, I'd like to do that for him, even though he's 43 and is raising three little girls. He doesn't have very much to put into it, but I'm trying to encourage him to think about that now. He and his wife are at a good age, and he does save.
Yes.
And he does
good.
Roth-type IRAs, and so I was thinking of doing that as a gift.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So many people do that. I mean, you'd be surprised.
Sure.
We have so many people that do that. So, yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I've taken enough of your time. I really appreciate it.
God bless you. Thank you so much for your encouragement. Sure do appreciate it.
Oh,
thank you.
You're a blessing. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. All right, I'm going to take two more. Yes.
Dan, Carl here. Some time ago,
hey, Carl.
I heard you talking about a bond for Israel, Israel bond, and I haven't heard
Israel
anything
bond.
Recently.
Yeah. That has really been a difficult situation. I probably should have never mentioned it. I every time you think you're right there on top of something, it kind of fell apart a little bit due to some forces here in the U.S. I'm still working, or I haven't dropped it yet. But I'll tell you what I do know. I know more about Israel bonds than I ever did before, and that's a good thing. I spent time in Israel with the finance minister and talking about this, and then got to the Bank of Hanlopen Bank in Israel, who handles it. They were all gung-ho and ready to go, but unfortunately, they don't control their forces that are primarily so the big one is New York City, and then. So the big, the big issue is there. So we're trying to get over that hurdle. But I would say to you this, that you can search Israel bonds and go directly to whoever is selling them in your area. So you would be. You would fall into an office of Israel bonds, and you can, wherever that is, call there, and if you want to start investing in Israel bonds. And Yvonne and I have been buying some of those for our grandchildren, and it's really they have really great opportunities there. They're very, very strong. They've never missed a payment since their inception. They're backed by, obviously, a government and a very strong economy. It's a little confusing because they have so many different levels and so many different types of bonds. And my goal was to simplify it and bring it into a very understandable way onto my website for our partners, and I'm still trying to do it. But until then, I will say this: after all of my vetting and all my research, I certainly would recommend anybody considering. I just can't direct anybody to you'd have to Google it and see. Where do you live?
Arkansas.
Arkansas, so you probably, you'd probably end up calling their Dallas office, I'm guessing. Or, I'm sorry, Houston. It would probably be Houston. I don't think they're in Dallas. So, they only have, they've got locations around, Atlanta, or maybe Atlanta, you'd go. Atlanta, New York City, Philadelphia, Dallas, Houston. The bigger cities, Los Angeles and such. And, but I would check into it if I were you. They're good. They're good. They're strong bonds. I mean, they're going to get more than a CD and more than a U.S. savings bond. So if you're conservative and you want to preserve, that might be a good thing to think about. And as long as Israel stays in existence, they'll be worth something. That's our risk. you do know they're going to be annihilated at some point in time, and only to rise again. But we'll, you know, we'll see. So they are great, though. They're sound, secure, and they're better than a lot of things out there.
All right. Well, thanks, sir.
You're welcome. Uh-oh. Oh, my word. What happened? Well, I was going to take two more calls. And let's see. Or one more call after that one. And I... operator error again. So we're just going to call it a day there. I apologize for that. We'll just leave it, and rather than get everybody battling in there for that one last call. So I sure appreciate all of you being with us, and know that I appreciate you guys so much, and thank you for sticking with us here. And be on the lookout. I'll send an alert out when I'm going to have this little strategy session, where I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some things that I want you to think about and change. Not going to be terribly impactful. It's nothing that you've got to wait for, or nothing that you've got to hinder anything that you're doing right now. It's going to impact the way you handle that, at least for the next year, maybe a year and a half or so, before we call it off and get back to a little bit more of a normalization. So keep on the lookout for that alert. I'll send that out to everybody as soon as we get started. I want to thank all of you. I said this before, but we had an incredible year of financial issues to the ministry. And God's people have been so good to this ministry, and I am so grateful and very humbled, because I know that those donations would not have come in without God nudging people to give. So think about this, how humbling it is that God would nudge anybody to give to this ministry. And it's very humbling, and it helps us realize and understand that we are in His will, and haven't done anything to bring shame to the ministry or shame to what we're doing. And we're very excited about that, and we really feel physically and monetarily in December, certainly felt God's presence in the ministry, and it's a wonderful place to be. So I thank all of you for your support. Keep spreading the word about financial issues as we continue to grow. Next month, it'll be 21 years, holy mackerel, and we continue to grow and get stronger by the grace of God. So thank you all. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. God bless.